Hello, everybody. Welcome to Five Rounds. It's also WrestleMania night, so we're going to churn this stuff out as quick as we possibly can. Hit that intro. Hello all, I am Mags, and with me, as always, my son, Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
I'm brilliant. Thankfully, that the UFC is what? It's 11 o'clock in England, and yeah, I'm absolutely buzzing. It's not fucking morning. I'm right.
Yeah, Dana White knows full well he can't take on the mat that is WrestleMania. So he gave us an early card, so props to him.
But Vince knows that he can't take on the mat of a storm of Mother Nature, so... Yeah.
Please don't delay it, because I don't think I could survive waiting.
Who's the bigger winner?
Well, it did beat God in a match in back last year, 2006, so maybe it's payback. but before we get into the event, let's do a little bit of bill paying. Let's talk about our new partners at Shooting the Sportish. We've just agreed a deal with a company called Sleafs. That's sleafs.com. They're a company that provide sportswear for and compression gear and safety equipment for athletes and all those kind of those kind of people. So if you are in the market for some quality and custom compression wear, then Sleafs are definitely the company for you. So you can go to www.sleafs.com and use our promo code STSR25, which will get you 25% off your first purchase, and you can also keep using that code over and over again. So that's sleafs.com, sleafs.com, and our promo code is STSR25. And don't forget, we also have a Patreon here at Shooting the Sports, so we would be absolutely eternally grateful if you were willing to go and join that, and you would be rewarded with tons and tons of unique and very much amazing content over there. So that's patreon.com/shootsportsish. So let's talk about this UFC card, UFC on ABC2, UFC Vegas 23, whatever the kind of names that they give these cards.
It's just, yeah, if you pick your best name, send it in chat, and then we'll pick off for it.
For me, I always go off the headline fight, so this for me is Spartan Art, Vittoria versus Holland. Some interesting fights on the card, so I'll just quickly run through these prelims. As I tend to do, we started with Imper Kazanganani. I can never say his name right. Mm-hmm. Much apologies, but he got the second round submission against Sasha Palatnikov. Then going into the recorded prelims, we had Jung Dae-young getting the decision against William Knight. Another decision in the featherweights when Luis Saldana picked up the win over Jordan Griffin. Third decision in a row with Jack Shaw getting the bantamweight win over Hunter Azura.
Jack Shaw, shout out there from Cage Warriors, one of his ex-fighters.
Yeah, absolutely. On that unbeaten run, I think he's now, what, 14-0?
14-0 now. Kicking ass, absolute animal.
Going into the heavyweight division, and Yaris Daniel picked up the win and the first round knockout of Jorgen De Castro. John McDessie got a victory in the lightweight division over Ignacio Bahamondes by decision. Then we had Mateus Gamrot getting the second round KO in the lightweight division against Scott Holtzman. And then the featured prelim was Jim Miller taking on Joe Selecki, a big decision victory there for Selecki. So going on to the main card, it was originally six fights on this main card, but it's been cut down to five.
Oh, it's a fight.
I can't remember what the actual lineup were, but UFC have been very recently been like kind of playing around with the fights in the first place. So come fight night, they usually kind of whittle it down. I think even next week's fight card, I've actually got six on. So, but I expect that, that'll get dropped down to five.
Yeah, but five is obviously pulling out of either injuries or like illnesses. It's like they'll either like try and get people into a place. If they can't do that, it's usually like, hey, well, we're moving your fight. You're fighting on this card instead.
Yeah, exactly. So the first fight on this card was Matt Perry versus Daniel Rodriguez. And not a good day at the office for Matt Perry, to be fair. Absolutely outclassed all the way through the fight for me. Started off quite bright in the way that Matt Perry does. He's very much a one-directional fighter. He only goes. He doesn't take a back step. But he just couldn't handle the range of Rodriguez for me. Hit a lot of shots. He tried to get his range with kicks. But he just wasn't effective at all. And I think you said it best. It's about time now he stopped all this messing about in terms of teams and in terms of having his corners and get somebody who is going to train him properly, because it's just not working. Since he's had just his wife in his corner, he's struggled.
Well, I know he's been working with somebody. I can't remember off the top of my head, but he has been working with someone leading up to the camp now, obviously. Didn't have him in the corner. Now, he was saying about how he might have him in the next corner, but it's about time. Second or his third loss in a row in that division. Now, he's only 29, so he's still got plenty of time. But if in the UFC, you're in that organization where it's in such a big organization, you're in the high level of elite fighters, you can't be pissing about that. You need a team that fully supports you and is fully behind you. And he's looking for a team that cares about you, because he's, I think the main thing about him, that he's thinking about a lot of coaches out there and that lot, they're in it for the money, and he's not wrong. A lot of people are in it for the money.
Yeah, it's a business.
Yeah, but I think that's what he just needs. He needs to find a team that sort of cares about him, that and he enjoys being with. And he needs to get his head screwed on, because he's going to quickly end up getting cut from the UFC. And
I mean, three losses in a row, and with the kind of a baggage that comes with him, it's not a hard decision for Dave.
Yeah, it's absolutely not. But then, like I said to you earlier before the podcast, if he did get cut from the UFC, he's still young. It might actually not be a bad thing for him, because if he goes to a different organisation with less eyes on him, like we've seen it a lot of times, like obviously Rory McDonald in the PFL, yeah, fair enough. They might be well-known, but they're not watched. Like, no one's going to tune in like every single week to watch their shows like they do with the UFC. So sometimes it can actually be better for fighters to sort of drop off a bit, get the confidence back. And especially with Matt Perry, if he finds a team and gets his confidence back, he's still, 29? So
oh, yeah, absolutely. I think the issue is, though, it's his size. He struggles to make a difference at welterweight. And this is a guy who's talking about going up to middleweight. He'd get absolutely decimated middleweight.
This is another thing of his problem. He's a fighter. He's not a nutritionalist. He's a fighter. And he's always struggled with his weight, and he's always hated fighting at welterweight. Now, if he found a nutritionalist that could build him a diet that worked for him, that he enjoys, that's healthy, that can, and obviously not keep him at 170 flat or whatever, just around
make
that
a manageable weight.
Yeah, like ten pounds, about 180, around that 180 mark. Keep him around there to where he's not having to cut a shit ton of weight and feel drained to try and make the 170 mark. Mm-hmm. But that's why obviously he went up to he would want him to go to like middleweight and all the other nonsense and stuff. But if he went up to middleweight into the top five category, he gets beat every day off all of them.
I don't even think top five. I think you're looking at top 15, probably. Give him a handy fart.
Yeah, well, I just want that in a category of where it's definitely going to happen. The top five. If he fights in the top five of that middleweight, which is he's never going to happen. But if it was, he gets beat all day, especially the way you were fighting tonight. Because his head movement weren't there. Like DC and Dominic Cruz said it perfectly. He just wasn't moving his head, and even though his body was moving, his head was just a still target all the time, and jab was just messing up. And
that left hand was just ripping him to bits. It killed him.
He broke his nose again in the first round. And I think that's a problem with fighters like Mark Perry. They're more heart than they are brains in a way. And sometimes the toughness can actually lose them the fights. And with him, like I say, fair enough, he can take a punch, he can take a beating, but there's no good in being a human punching bag that don't win you fights.
I mean, he lasted the fight, which you've got to give him props for that.
But again, that's just like I said, though, because he's a tough guy, yeah. He's a human puncher. You don't knock him out with one punch, but again, that don't win you fights.
But the thing with lasting in this fight, where he took so many shots, is the last thing he needs is another issue with CTE. And being the kind of fighter that he is with not exactly the best defensive game, is going to get hurt. And if he went up to 185 for a prolonged period of time, those guys hit way harder than they do in the welterweight division.
Yeah.
And he would be very, very much injured.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's scary with fighters like Mark Perry. So obviously, coming from a fighter background, CT and stuff like that is a very scary thing, especially with one punch you can get. It's the consequences you've got to take. Now, obviously, JSP said it best. If you're a young fighter who's not looking at trying to be the best or be one of the best, pick a different job because it's not for you. There's no point. The consequences just weigh out the pros sometimes. And it is true. There's so much, like the negatives are all up here and the positives are down here. Like between you making it into the places like the UFC are so low in numbers. Look at it for Paddy the Pibble. He's been around for time in Cage Warriors. And fair enough, he should have been in the UFC, but he's not. Up until recently, he's been into the UFC. So that's how long it is. Like Max Holloway, he had to have like 13 wins or 11 wins in a row before a title shot and stuff. So it's not an easy path to victory. And as well, Anthony Smith coming into the light heavyweight division, I think he already had like 38 professional fights before he even got into the UFC. And I guarantee the most he made off one of them were probably $5,000, if that. Just off one of these small shitty town shows that he were doing rather than the UFC. So yeah, it's for Mark, he's got a young child. He hasn't got the best track record out of the octagon or in the octagon now. Mm-hmm. And he's not one of them fighters where you think, oh yeah, he'll do well with brain damage, because he wouldn't. He's one of them people who possibly could make mixed martial arts have that bad name of, oh, everyone's just violent.
How long ago was it when he were kicking windows through and injured himself?
Exactly. It's a scary thought to do, and that's why he needs to book his ideal. He's 29, he's only still young, and the way he acts, you look at him sometimes and you think, you've been in too many wars, you.
Yeah.
But he definitely needs a team behind him, and he just needs to sort out what he definitely needs to do. He's a fun fighter. He's a fan favourite. A lot of the fans like him, and he needs to start putting that behind him in a bit and just focusing on himself or his career. And if he's not going to do that, he needs to focus on his child.
Mm-hmm. So then after that, we go into the women's strawweight division, and Mrs. Nunes, Nina Nunes, taking on Mackenzie Dern. And yeah, this was a very good victory for Mackenzie Dern. Nunes obviously coming off not long having a baby and kind of having that building that family with Amanda, but she's said for a long time that she still is hungry for fighting and hungry for wins. Unfortunately, she met a very, very impressive Mackenzie Dern in this fight, and this is someone who is probably the future of UFC strawweight division. It was just a really classy performance by Mackenzie Dern. Nunes started obviously quite defensive with her hands really high up, but Dern was able to easily break through, land shots, and then once she got the fight to the ground, Nunes struggled. She was able to pull guard for a little while, but once Dern postured up, was able to break that hold and work Nunes into position. It was all over, but the shouting, and props to Nunes for not fully giving up. But once Dern locked in the sub, the grip on the left, and it was all over, and she had no issue, no other way out but to tap. a massive, massive win for McKenzie, because I think Nunes was still that fifth ranked, even though she hadn't fought for a while, and Dern was looking to break into that top 10. I think she breaks into that top 5.
Especially after that win. Now, obviously, I was looking at Nunes, and I was looking at her thinking, two-year layoff, coming back in, McKenzie Dern. Now, McKenzie Dern is not an easy fight. She's quickly getting brilliant on the feet. Her striking game is coming on.
I mean, she's 6-1 now in UFC.
Yeah, and her ground game was already phenomenal before she even got into the UFC, and that's only just getting better. So, all-round, she's just becoming an all-round better mixed martial artist. Now, obviously, Nunes, when coming out of that two-year layoff, she didn't... That first round, it looked like, oh, she's having a bit of jitters there, and it's like, you can't just say, oh, well, she's doing shit, is it? That 2 year layoff, especially with the pressure of that, you've got to give it, got to give her some credit. But yeah, for me, McKenzie Dern just went into the fight and just did exactly what she needed to do, especially on the feet, pressuring her up against the fence and basically showing her that she's not scared to box with her. And that's one good thing about when you're brilliant on the ground, you're not scared to to throw your hands, especially when you learn to actually throw your hands and get get combos off and pick your shots, and you actually start building confidence over farts. You're not worried about firing the shots, because if you was to get taken down, you're not worried because you're comfortable there. You can get back to your feet, or you can fart off your back comfortably, but that's only if you can. We've seen it with Khabib, when Khabib sort of, when Khabib was the first guy to knock Conor McGregor down in that second or third round. That's because he got comfortable with throwing his hands, because he knew if anyone was to take him down, it would never going to happen. It was always that good, and that's the one thing about McKenzie Dern. She's quickly coming along in the striking department to where she's now one of the fighters to where it's like, oh, you're going to be like, what do? Do I defend the takedown? Is she going to try and hit an army roll me? Is what she going to try and do? And then we've seen it on the ground when they took it to the ground and she was fighting for that arm. It's basically, when you're rear naked choking, you're an opponent, instead of basically being right up here, you're on the arm down here. And when you're grabbing their arm and you're grabbing your arm, in a way, you're sort of twisting your wrist in a way, and feeling that against your bone, it can be horrible sometimes. And Ronda Rousey does it best, and especially when she grounded it, and then she physically does do it fully, and then you're fully like extending your body to pull it down. And McKenzie has executed it perfectly, and you got to give it to Nunes. She tapped straight away. She knew it were over. Yeah. There's no point in tearing any ligaments or doing any damage. She knows she's got to go home to look after a baby, and at the end of the day, she's got Mother Nunes to look after, the double champ. And to be honest with you, after that fight, I saw Nunes and I'm like, shit, Nunes is gonna kick cock out of McKenzie Dern. Like, you just saw McKenzie Dern looking at Nunes going up to her, like, sorry. she didn't do that. All respect, Sean, all the way around. But yeah, when you've seen Nunes coming to the octagon, it were give her wife a loving hug, like, just see the respect. Respect all the way around, but yeah, it weren't a good night in the office for Nunes, but McKenzie Dern, what a win.
Absolutely. Let's go into the middle fight of this card now.
What's the flip flop? I found it.
That's the title of the episode. I think I've lost my flip flop. Going to the middle part of this card now. One of our favourite fighters, Smiling Sam Alvey, taking on Julian Marquez. Yeah, another fighter who didn't have a good day at the office, unfortunately. But it was not for the lack of training. If one thing that Sam Alvey always brings is the guy will swing until he can't swing no more. Unfortunately for him, Marquez was pretty wise to him all the way through the fight, and he really kind of worked Alvey with the jab. There were a couple of points where it looked like he'd finished Alvey quite early in the first round. There was one point where it looked like Alvey was knocked out, and the extra shots from Marquez walking back up, because he actually went down to his knee was able to get back to his feet. There were a few points in this fight where I thought, God, Sam, this is over. But it was, he's just got the heart of a lion, that never say die attitude, which, I mean, we've just talked about it in with the Matt Perry. It's not always the wiser decision, but you can tell a lot of fighters go just based off instinct. And Sam is very much an instinctual fighter, but Marquez, he was just laser accurate and was able to just destroy Alvey on the feet. And then again in the second round, another point where both guys were swinging, landing, and Alves was absolutely wobbly. Got sent down to a knee again. That's when Marquez followed up with hammer fists and was able to grab the neck, put in the squeeze. And Alvey, wow. I mean, you are a brave, brave son of a bitch, but I would rather you have tapped than be put out cold, because when the ref jumped in to stop the fight because Alvey was asleep, when Marquez let him go, his head just smashed against the floor. I hate to see that in fighters. Essentially know that you've been beaten. It's I would rather you tap and survive to fight another day than be choked clean out. But unfortunately for Alvey, he does get the loss, and it's a big victory for Julian Marquez.
Well, I said Julian Martin. Well, Sam Alvey, I've got to put it to him. I first remember him coming into the UFC with the head coach, Trevor Whitman, always smiling. He's been in the UFC for time now.
I think it's like his, 21st fight or something like that in the UFC?
Yeah, absolutely mental. And he's always smiling from start of the bell to the end of the bell, no matter what decision comes out. And I guarantee if he does a press conference, if he's allowed to do a press conference, I'm sure he will. He got choked out, he'll really get knocked out. I'm sure the press conference, guarantee he'll be smiling in that. But yeah, Julian Marquez, like you said, it's what a performance that he put on. The jab, he was just using that perfectly. It was just a piston constantly. If he weren't trying to throw it to hit, he was throwing it to feint to try and set up that right hand. And he was perfectly mixing everything up. And the one, like we're saying with Mackenzie Dern, like she did, that jab, and she was mixing it up on the feet because she knew she was going to either could take it to the ground, or if it did go to the ground, she was comfortable. In this case, Juliana were able to actually pick his shots off, and when he sort of just started letting them shots go, especially in the second round, and he hurt Sam and dropped him, he knew that it were over. And that's the one good thing about a fighter's instinct. He sort of he saw that rear naked choke was there. And instead of just going, oh, I've got him hurt here, I'm going to flurry him with punches, get tired out, and possibly, there's always a possibility, especially with someone like Sam Alvey, Smiling Sam, he's a veteran in the game. He knows how to work different positions. He knows how to basically get himself safe. He knows how to keep his head covered, especially when you're laying shots and he's in the ground turtling up. Yeah, there's a possibility the ref might stop it with a TKO. Always a possibility that he covers up enough to where you gas out and he gets back to his feet, and he's the veteran he is. But where Julian, he were able to see that and fuck that, I'm not going to let this fight carry on. Yeah. Saw the rear naked choke, finished it there and then. Perfect opportunity for him, perfect win. Marley Cyrus owes him a friendly date after this because he called her out last one, so it's only fair.
And she agreed as well. She agreed. So, yeah, and the thing with finishing the fight as quickly as you can in this kind of a day and age is it's likely you can get pick up another fight in the next like month or so.
Well, that's
so you can get double the paydays. I mean, that's essentially happened in the main event. But before we get to that, let's just go over this this co-main event. Two hungry young fighters in the featherweight division, both unbeaten in the UFC going into this fight. Both, I think, have only lost once in their whole careers. Someone's all had to go. And unfortunately for Sadiq Yusuf, it was his. Arnold Allen now going to 8-0 in the UFC and really making waves in that featherweight division. This fight was an interesting one because of just how back and forth it was. Both guys were just looking to land, looking to finish the fight very early. a couple of actually in the first round, there was points where both fighters were making mistakes because they were overstretching, and there were a couple of slips. There were a couple of times when they were overstretching and putting themselves in vulnerable positions. But I think after Yusuf had the better of the early exchange, landing the bigger shots, I think Alan kind of woke up and kind of turned the dial up. He was able to land more. He was able to control his pace. Was able to stop the shots from Yusuf all the way through the first round until we get to that near the end. I think that Yusuf started throwing a lot more knees when he was able to secure the clinch. But going into the second, Alves just turned it up. He was landing a lot more shots. Yusuf, again, I think he got relaxed. He looked like he relaxed. And this was such an interesting fight to watch because these are two guys who are still so young. I think they're only like 27 and 24, respectively. But they fought a very kind of like mature, classy fight. But for me, Alan just, it was just that one step above Yusuf for me. He was his shots were crisper. He did better to stuff takedowns and was able to scramble a lot better. He scored more in the clinch for me, and the judges seem to agree, giving the fight basically all the way across the card, 29-28. All three judges gave Yusuf the final round, which is fair because I think he knew he was two down and he knew he had to go for broke. It was just unfortunate that he wasn't able to get the finish that he needed. Alan was able to fend him off, especially near the end when Yusuf was trying to just bludgeon him with those elbows, and Alan was able to come out with a victory.
Yeah, this was the main event for me because I knew this fight were going to live up to. Mm-hmm. Obviously, till the fight in Vittori, that would have been my main event. But when that fight got cancelled, even though it were a decent fight, this was definitely my main event. I knew this were going to live up to the hype. I knew both fighters were going to come out to swing and get the win. I knew none of them wanted to leave it to the judges. Even though it went to the judges, you can tell there was both looking for finishes. This was a proper mixed martial arts bout that you'd want to see. There was clinch work, there was grappling work, there was striking work. Everything you could ask for was in this fight, respectively. Got to give it to Sadiq. He was a fighter's fighter. You can tell that he did not want to lose that fight, especially when the judges give him the third round. I agree with him. He knew that he was down 2-0, so he needed a finish in that third round. He wasn't able to get that, but he was able to pressure him, which is a good thing in a way. He can come away from that as, even though on paper he lost, but within himself, he could take that away as a little victory for him that he knew after a solid 10 minutes of basically getting dominated in a way that he could still find it within himself to bring it back and win that third round. Now, when you're speaking like that, that's what basically makes you, in my opinion, that's what makes you a fighter. That's what makes you a champion, being able to look at yourself going, shit, I'm losing here, I need to do something, instead of going, nah, I'm all right, fuck it, I won that, blah, 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 blowing smoke up your own arse. If you can look at yourself and go, I didn't like that, I can do that better, that's when you're going to make yourself a champion, because you're trying to adjust yourself rather than going, I'm all right here, I'm good here, I'm decent, I'm better than everybody else here. Even if you feel like that, you're still looking at stuff you can adjust on, and that's what Sadiq were able to do. He was trying to adjust. Unfortunately, there was only three rounds to the fight, and he wasn't able to do that. But Arnold Allen, man, what an absolute performance he put on, from the takedowns to the absolute striking, defense and offense. I think he's one of the most underrated British mixed martial artists in the UFC. Now, in England, I know a lot of people might think, oh, we've only got a handful of fighters in the UFC. We talk about all of them, but we really don't. If you're not talking about Darren Till or Molly McCann, or now Paddy Pimblett, there's not really a lot of people. A lot of people aren't really talking about Nathan. A lot of people aren't really talking about Mason Wilson. A lot of people aren't really talking about Reese Dean. A lot of people aren't talking about Arnold Allen.
They should be.
They should be. Now, obviously, respectively, I can understand why they're speaking about all these other people, but even though we've got a handful of people in the UFC, Arnold Allen is one of them. Oh, sorry, Leon Edwards and the rest of them. Jesus Christ, I'm going to kick my ass if I missed him out. So Arnold, I think he's one of them, and he's one of the most underrated, because he's not one of the most well-known, and he comes from Cage Warriors, which a lot of people in England, especially with me, Cage Warriors is one of them filter organizations with the UFC. If you pick up one of their belts and you defend that a couple of times in spectacular fashion, you're generally on your way, or you're getting a phone call from Dana White or Hunter about getting a contract. Either way, it's happened too many times. Yeah. I think there's been, like, off the top of my head, I think there's been like 97 or 103, around that number of champions to come from Cage Warriors to go into the UFC, and that's with everywhere within Europe. So a lot of fighters you'll see, Michael Bisping, Conor McGregor, Dan Hardy, all these people have come from Cage Warriors. Yeah. So it's always a good organisation to sort of look at. And Arnold Allen came from this organisation, and he's just a fighter, and especially in England, I know hundreds of people who want to be fighters. I know 100 people who are up here who could probably hang with the best. But the only problem is the UFC only look for the elite. They don't look for the best. So it's one of them. Arnold Allen were able to stand out, yeah, within this crowd of a massive group of Europeans on just a small island. We were able to fight all these people to then go into the UFC to still keep that storm going, mm-hmm, keep making their waves. And what, I think he was ranked 10 going to his fight in the featherweight division. He's... After this, as well, Sadiq, he's not one of the fighters where a lot of people could say, oh, this were a pushover fight or whatever, because he really weren't, either, because Sadiq... He's an absolute killer. He's a warrior in there. He's got heart, and he were able to show it that he's not going to go away easily. If you want to get a win against him, you're going to have to work for it. Arnold Allen was able to use his experience, and we're able to put that on show tonight. Was able to outwork Sadiq, outpoint him. And yeah, fair enough, it went to the judges, but it wasn't a boring fight, not in the slightest way. Arnold Allen with a perfect performance. He got the win, onto bigger and better things. And like I said, this was my performance. So Arnold Allen, perfect performance, my friend.
Yeah, and like we said, he's gone now to 8-0. I can certainly see him taking on someone maybe like Calvin Kattar next. Around that level, I mean, there's a lot of fights already stacked up in that featherweight division, so it's it's limited to who we could face.
Either way, I'll back him either way, whoever he fights next.
Josh Emmett, that'd be a good fight for him.
See, that would be a good fight. I think because the one thing about him as well, I think he's one of these fighters where, even though he's not a big name, he's had enough fights in the UFC now against good enough talent.
That win surely takes him into the top 10.
Well, I think, like I said, I think he was already ranked 10.
11, so, I think.
Oh, well, 11 or around that mark. Yeah. So he definitely takes him into the top 10 speak of fighters when you're doing the matchmaking. So for him to get, if you say top 5, I'd still go behind him. I'd still back him. It'd be a tougher opportunity for him to get to the belt, but you couldn't say that he doesn't deserve it. Like you say, 8 wins in the UFC, a couple more wins, especially in the way he did it, even though he didn't get a finish, he was able to keep the fight interesting, keep the fight entertaining. The electricity was still there in the fight from start to finish, from round 1 to the end of round 3. You were just excited. So if he was to have any more fights like that, or if his next fights are finishers, I don't think you can deny him a title shot.
No. I mean, it's a killer division, but he's definitely getting to the point where he's standing out in that division.
Well, that's it. Well, we always know, a lot of people, especially casuals, think if you do good and you get like 3 or 4 knockouts in your amateur career or professional career outside the UFC, you're instantly going to get signed like that. And 2 knockouts, you're going to get signed, you're going to get a title shot. It's like, Max Holloway had to fight, like I said, Max Holloway had to fight 11 times before getting a title shot. I think Bisping had to fight about 14, 15 times before getting a title shot. It don't work. You don't get a title shot off off to it. Unless you fight, like that we've talked about all the time, unless you're fighting in these women divisions what aren't as stacked and you can get a couple of decent wins, get your name out there, you ain't getting a title shot off 5 wins. Not you look at even that the guy who's got Colby can't even kill him.
Oh yeah.
Chimaev. He's making storms, but even he wouldn't get a title shot after 5 wins.
No.
Not a chance.
And let's go. We've kind of like delayed it because there's not really a lot to talk about, but let's just get over with, get this main event out of the way. Ironically, it was the longest fight going the distance, 25 minutes, but we've got the least amount to talk about it because
it was a very boring fight.
Yeah. The most interesting thing for me was the beginning when Vettori got kicked.
Right in the balls, man.
I mean, that was the funniest part of the fight for me. The fact that Vettori called Kevin Holland out and we got a bit of a giggle. But for me, this was disappointing because of a couple of reasons. One, because it was the same fight that we saw Kevin Holland get beat against Derek Brunson. He was controlled on the ground. He had no ground game whatsoever. And the other reason is because we didn't get a finish. We had to sit through 25 minutes. Now, fair play to Marvin Vettori. He tried to get the finish. He absolutely.
The arm triangle was dog shit.
No, I mean, the subs were probably not the best, but he did try and land a lot of shots. And we got to a point where Kevin Allen's left eye was basically closed. And the doctor had to come in and kind of check him over before allowing him to foul. But you could literally take any one of these rounds and watch him in any order, because it was just the same old, same old. Vettori gets a takedown. Holland doesn't have any ground game whatsoever. He's controlled for 5 minutes on the floor.
You could show me the fight right now, playback, mix the rounds up, and I wouldn't be able to tell you which one were round one to round five without going, oh yeah, this gassed out, that must be end at round. So.
Yeah, it was, for someone who made such a big wave in 2020 with 4 wins in a row, Kevin Holland seems to be determined in wrecking it, all the momentum he's got, because he's now got two losses in a row where he's gone 25 minutes got wrestle fucked.
He even needs to work on his wrestling defense so the fight either it doesn't get to the floor if it as much, or he needs to be able to work to get back to his feet. Because for one, as well, we've got a lot of problems, especially mixed martial arts. We've always had that problem in the last decade of belt giving out just because of name value. And I'm not talking about a UFC belt. I'm talking about your black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, because he's not. Because, again, both of these guys, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, are dog shit. Kevin Holland apparently is a black belt. What did he show about from some fancy roles that you see some kid doing a tournament on Facebook when he's entering blue belt tournament division?
If Kevin Holland is a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, then with very little fight experience, I could defend better than Kevin Holland.
Exactly, like the only one thing that impressed me enough was answering the phone, and we call that when he was in the arm triangle. That's exactly what we call that. Mm-hmm. Answering the phone, you put your arm there. Your artery is here. It stopped Vettori from being able to put pressure on here.
Yeah.
He was able to breathe. That's why he was able to there for so long. When he was kicking his legs up, that was just to basically show Vettori that, oh, this is working a bit. When it weren't, it was already knackered. He's like, oh, I can get a bit of energy back here.
He was maintaining position. That's all he was doing.
That's all he was doing. He was making Marvin Vettori think, oh, this is working, but it weren't. Marvin Vettori was like on his knees and on his elbows. That submission is exactly what the commentary said. It's not a squeeze submission. You don't squeeze it. You put your pressure on it.
Yeah.
Because as soon as they're answering the form, that's why the moment you're squeezing, you're putting pressure on one side. They're making sure that you can't put that extra pressure on this side.
Yeah.
The moment you're squeezing it, you're taking that full equation out. You're squeezing that down with it.
Yeah.
Because you squeeze the hand and the arm into them. So again, both of the jiu-jitsu were dog shit. It sort of pissed me off, this fight. I was falling asleep in round three. Not really, but yeah,
it's frustrating to watch. That's the best thing, because these are two. I mean, the hype train behind Kevin Holland was unreal. And fair play to it, because he did score five wins in a row. That's unprecedented in this kind of era. But it's being found out very, very quickly, and it's being found out by someone whose wrestling is not exactly elite level.
Exactly, it's not elite level. It's absolutely not elite level. And with my inventory, it sort of pissed me off, because it proper sounds like I'm shitting on him, and I am shitting on him for being so boring. But from a guy who was, he weren't looking for finish, because the only thing he was doing was sort of laying on Kevin Owens and basically doing enough to where the Herb Dean wasn't going to stand him up.
Yeah.
He wasn't posturing up enough. And when he was, especially up against the cage, what a little pussy. Pick your shots. I'll punch your body here. Oh, I'll slap you.
I think he's seen how weak Holland was on the ground against Brunton and thought, this is my chance to capitalise.
It's not the easy way to take the victory, which is... And I really don't blame him, especially when you're in that title shot position. I don't blame him, but you're not going to do that against Israel Adesanya. Now, I understand a lot of people are going to think, oh, yeah, Israel Adesanya's beating him now, he's taking him down. Everyone's knew that throughout his full career. But in that middleweight division, you can't take him down, because that's his natural division. The only reason... Jan were able to do it. He's a much bigger and stronger guy, especially at 205 when he was gassed, when he was both tired, and he took him down to the later rounds.
And I think, you know, to be fair, if this Marvin Vettori is able to take down Izzy's ground game is significantly better than.
Well, that's it. I don't even think Izzy's a. I think the only thing Izzy's a blue belt. I don't think he's a black belt, and that's legit, because he's a stand up fighter and his game. He's just wrestling defense is way better than Kevin Holland. So again, like I was saying, you're not going to take him down easily. And even if you do get into the clinch game, he's a kickboxer. So you best be known that you're feeling them elbows and knees during them close range fights with him, especially when you're in that telephone box with him. He's just gonna mess your body up, and he's just gonna mess your face up, especially with Marvin Vettori, because as well with this fight, Kevin was able to hit him with some good shots, because he's another walking punch bag. He was just tough. His skill level is meh. He's just one of them. He's a leaner version of Costa. Like, I agree with Darren Silver. He's like, what did he call him? An ugly old fucking Lord of the Rings motherfucker or something like that. Hit a fucking elf on her. But yeah, that's it. He's just one of them. You can hit him in the head of a club and it'll do nothing.
Yeah.
And that's one of the sort of fighters he is for me. But is he a destroyer? And in a way, if he were going to fight like this against Till, I don't think Till gets took down that easy in the middleweight division. Because if he was, I think Gastelum would have took him down a lot more times. And Gastelum's a fucking very good wrestler.
And if he took down Till... Till has got a way better ground game than Kevin Holland.
Well, I know Till's got a decent ground game, but
better than what was short saw off Kevin Holland, surely.
I think now more defensively, but offensively when it came, because apparently Kevin Holland, he's been working on like his Kimuras and stuff like that to try and work positions. We didn't see. I think I saw it once in between one round when they were stood up against the fence and they were daring to go for it or threatening to go for it, but that was it. And that was the only thing he was doing. And yeah, it sort of just pissed me off, because the only thing I got in my head watching this is, fuck me, he needs to go to boxing him, because mixed martial arts is not for him. And then the other thing in my head is, fuck me, this is mixed martial arts. This is not a wrestling match. Now, don't get me wrong, I love wrestling. I love Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I love Muay Thai. I love kickboxing in their own format. I love them. But in mixed martial arts together, it's a fight. You can't just lay on your opponent and go, oh yeah, well, this is it. You're gonna win the fight, fair enough. But call me biased as well. This is probably, again, you could say this is the UFC's fault for just looking for people who's finishers, but looking for strikers all the time. And Kevin Owens has been one of them. Look at him in 2020, got like four finishers just striking, and a lot of people don't come with ground games, especially when you're so young. Look, Kevin Owens, like, I know from experience, my background is more on the ground. I know on my feet, I get my ass kicked off a lot of people. But that comes with time and experience and putting the work in and practicing. And especially when you're young and you get into the UFC for just showing, oh yeah, I'm a spectacular striker. doesn't mean when you break into that top 10, top 5 like Kevin Owens did, doesn't mean that that's going to work for you every time. Because, again, it's been shown his last two fights, his weakness. His takedown defence is just piss poor. Mm-hmm. Up against the cage, it looks like he's got spaghetti legs because he doesn't do anything. He doesn't try and bridge up against the cage. He doesn't try and do absolutely anything. You can... Marvin Vettori wasn't doing anything. He was just doing old technique, pull him and turn in the corner. Because he knew as soon as he was doing that, spaghetti legs were going, oh shit, I can't do it. And that's all Kevin Owens were doing.
I hope you guys are watching that or watching on the replay, because what happened then is just does not transition to audio.
Well, that's what I mean.
You're right, though. It was not a good day at the office for either of them. The only problem is Marvin Vettori comes out with a victory and Kevin Owens gets his second loss.
Only problem is Marvin Vettori's probably going to fight Izzy next, and he's going to realise, hang on a minute, shit, my ground game is not as good as I thought it was. Even though he fought a better game than Brunson, because Brunson was mainly lying on him, he wasn't doing as much, he was just doing enough to where the fight wasn't getting stood up. He wasn't confident on the feet with Kevin Owens. And no. If you're not confident on the feet with Kevin Owens, you're definitely not going to be confident on the feet against Izzy.
Yeah. Izzy will be rubbing his hands together and thinking, this is a quick, easy gimme fight.
Well, he'll be loving it, especially after coming off a loss against Dan. He'll be like, yeah. Well, the champion he is, probably not, but he could be thinking, shit. Get a bit of confidence back beating this clown, and then onto Till when Till comes back after his collarbone injury.
Yeah. So next week's event, there's no WrestleMania, so the UFC have got the bollocks to put it on a normal time for Americans, so it's back to 3 o'clock in the morning.
It's
for
the Brits. I thought you were about WrestleMania tonight.
With the main event, we're almost guaranteed it's going to be an absolute banger of a fight. Robert Whittaker taking on Calvin Gastelum, two of our favourite fighters here at Five Rounds. And the rest of the card is pretty damn stacked. We've got Violent Bob Ross, Luis Peña on the card, Andre Arlovski, Jeremy Stevens, Draca Closer. So it's going to be an absolute banger of a card next week.
How old is Andre Arlovski now?
He's about 500 years old.
He's been fighting for decades, man. Jesus Christ.
One of the early heavyweight champions in UFC.
Jeremy just doesn't age, he just gets younger.
definitely tune in next week for that. Thank you all for watching or listening along. Follow Five Round Pod on all social medias. Follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirby. Follow Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos. Definitely go and check out all the content on the networks that we're involved in. That's at Shooting the Sports Ish. At Chairshot Media and at Visionaries Global Media. If you are in the market for some quality compression gear or protection for elite level athletes, definitely use sleefs.com. That's SLEFS, and use our code STSR25 for 25% off your orders. And also, like I said earlier, if you are enjoying the content that we provide here at Shooting the Sports Ish, please follow us and support us on Patreon, where you can get way more quality content. That's the end of the show. I'm off now to prepare to watch WrestleMania be delayed for 2 hours by the weather. So that is the end.
And just before we go, if you're a small business or whatever around Lancashire, you don't want to sponsor the show and get your name a shout out on the show, just hit one of either me or Mags up. And Sleece, if you want to send me some free little sportswear, I'll share to give you a good review. wink, wink. But yeah, as well with the Patreon, if you're enjoying the content, please go and subscribe to that. It really helps us out, and we appreciate every single time when you do that. So, nice one. And adios, amigos.
Bye-bye, guys.